You're listening to Talking Travel with Roy Lowy and Friends, the number one source for travel news, reviews, and in-depth travel journalism, broadcasting live from Florida's Sun Coast on the Travel Talk Radio Network. Don't forget, you can listen to us online 24/7 at ttrn.com. And now, here's the travel guy, Roy Lowy. Hey!
Well, yes, and it is the travel guy, Roy Lowy. Thank you, Mike. And you're listening to Talking Travel on the Travel Talk Radio Network, TTRN.com, and on the World Travel and Dining Channel. My guests today are Evan Eggers, Sandra Feeney, L. Andrew Warner, and Suzanne Wright, the Wonder Woman, when we come back.
This is the story of Mary and Larry. They had cabin fever so bad it was scary.
We need a vacation, a place warm and sunny, a place that's fun for not much money.
Let's escape the cold and the snow. We'll fly Sky Value from Gary, Chicago.
Sky Value now offers great rates from convenient Gary, Chicago airport to your favorite hotspots, Orlando, St. Pete, Fort Lauderdale, Phoenix, and Las Vegas. Book your flight at flyskyvalue.com.
Gary, Chicago airport works for me. The drive was easy.
The parking secure and free.
Sky Value. You sure saved us money.
You're so smart.
And so is my honey.
And they flew Sky Value from Gary Chicago Airport happily ever after. Fares are one-way subject to availability and change. Restrictions apply. Fares do not include September 11th security fees and other U.S. taxes and fees. See participant agreement for details. Sky Value flights operated by Extra Airways, PC number 06154.
And for other, some other great values, this segment of the show is brought to you in part by SureCruise.com, your online cruise superstore, and in part by USA 3000 Airlines, serving seven different cities from Fort Lauderdale, Fort Myers, St. Pete, and Orlando. Mr. Evan Eggers, president of SureCruise.com, is on the phone. Thank you for joining us today, Evan.
Good morning, Roy.
Good morning to you. It's been a couple of weeks, and we need to do some catching up here.
Yeah, quite a bit going on the past couple of weeks, too.
But, you know, before we do, tell us about your new customer referral reward program.
Well, you know, we decided that we have, any good business that serves customers, right, wants to build their customer base by referrals, by customers saying, wow, we really like your service, and then referring their friends and family. And we have that happen a lot, and we wanted to put into place a formal program where people, when they refer someone to us, that not only do we reward the person they're referring, but then we reward the referrer as well as our way of saying thank you.
Now, how does that work?
Well, basically, people who have booked a cruise with us then have the ability to generate coupons good for onboard credits for their friends. So they can go up to their friend and say, here, if you go book a cruise at SureCruise.com, did a good job for me, you know, you'll get an onboard credit on your cruise. Then after that person sails, the referred person, then the person who gave them the coupon earns an onboard credit to use in a future cruise of their own. So, you know, it's our way of saying thank you to our loyal customers.
Great idea. And what do they get? Do they get a coupon to present, or how does that work?
Well, basically, the coupon is just a way of, so they have something, you know, in print, in writing they can have that explains it. But they do, when they book their cruises with us, we just go ahead and add onboard credit to their booking that they'll be able to spend on board on, you know, whatever they like, whether it's a bottle of wine or a shore excursion or a spa treatment. They can do whatever they want with it.
That's terrific. A great
idea.
Great.
Yeah, we call it Share the Wealth. And people who are interested, they can go to SureCruise.com. There's a link to it right from our homepage.
Good news, good news, Evan. You're always on top of it. What we like about you.
Well, we'll see about that.
Yeah, we've got to keep on top and see how it does work, actually.
That's right.
There's quite a number of things happening, as we mentioned earlier. But you know what? I didn't see the Rosie O'Donnell thing. Tell me about that.
Well, it's a little bit of a tempest in a teapot. You know how anything that happens involving Rosie O'Donnell instantly becomes newsworthy, right? Well, what Rosie decided to do, she has she is behind a company called Our Family Vacations. It's a vacation company that caters. It's gay and lesbian friendly, and it's a family business. So the idea is that it's people who have families, gay and lesbian people who have families. They want to go on a vacation that's, you know, very open, you know, to their environment. And their company chartered a Norwegian ship, the Norwegian Dawn, sailing July 7th. Out of New York, and as a result, of course, once the ship charter was complete with Norwegian then immediately canceled the advance booking as reservations of people who had already booked it. Now, that, you know, this happens all the time when a ship is chartered. You know, no matter how far in advance you charter a ship, there'll always be at least a few people who had already booked it before it was chartered, but now right. The cruise line has decided to give the whole ship over to one organization. they have to cancel those people's reservations and hopefully do something, you know, give them some kind of accommodation or credit on a future trip to apologize for kicking them off. Now, what made this unusual, first of all, is that it's Rosie's company that made it newsworthy, and second of all, that they were only doing this charter 5 months in advance. Charters are normally done, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12, 24 months in advance, so you don't have that many people booked on the trip already.
Right.
Doing it only 5 months in advance is very unusual and undoubtedly resulted in more people being canceled than would have, and again, made it, you know, more uncomfortable for Norwegian getting some publicity there, although most of it was directed at Rosie. Now, so the people who are, you know, saying, oh, Rosie canceled my cruise, that's not right. You know, if anybody should, if there's any annoyance to be spread around, it would be with that they're dissatisfied with the compensation Norwegian gave them because it was Norwegian's decision to cancel
right.
their cruise.
Right. And the thing, as you say, this must have been a very popular cruise previously before Rosie got involved and chartered it to have that many bookings that far out.
Well, that's right. I mean, well, you know, Norwegian, their New York trips have been growing and growing. They added the Norwegian Spirits, they added another ship, and now other cruise lines have jumped in there. So absolutely, this year-round New York cruising has gotten to be very popular.
Well, you know, as you say, these things happen, and you can blame a lot of things on Rosie, but I guess that's not one of them.
Yeah, I think she gets more or less a free pass on this one, although I'm sure her PR people have put a little note to themselves, let's charter ships farther in advance next time just to avoid this problem altogether.
The other interesting item I find particularly interesting is about Caribbean Cruise Lines is building a two-ship terminal in Roatan. Now, I've spent quite a bit of time in Roatan, and it's quite interesting. The island in itself is that although it's part of Honduras, the people there are English-speaking.
Interesting.
Yeah, and so it's a great spot, and the terminal and the docks are in pretty bad shape. So the mere fact that this is happening is wonderful. The only thing that that concerns me somewhat is that there goes another wonderful little hideaway spot that you know is going to be loaded with cruise people, and that's a good thing for the cruise industry. But when one is looking for a hideaway, it starts to limit the number that are left, and the ones that are left then become very expensive. But I understand that they're going to call it Mahogany Bay, which is a particular area there.
And
tell us more, if you will.
Well, I mean, it'll be they're expected to start building this. And this is Carnival Corporation who's doing this. And, of course, you know, Carnival owns a ton of cruise lines like Holland America, Princess, right. so forth and so on. So we expect all their brands, all their different brands to be using it. Called Mahogany Bay, as you say. It's going to be built starting in later this year and be completed in the summer of 2009. And it'll be on the Roatan waterfront, and it's a two-berth terminal, so they're designing it to accommodate the largest ships that are currently contemplated. You know, so that could be, as you say, up to 7,000 passengers daily who are disgorged into Roatan. So, you know, and they're saying some of the guesses they put out is they expect it to host, 225 cruise ship calls annually. 5 years after it starts. So they're building a welcome center and some fun things there, you know, restaurants, bars, all the kinds of things you'd expect to see in a modern cruise terminal.
Yeah, because there isn't much there now. I mean, it's a lovely little town. It's like a little fishing village. There are a number of waterfront hotels, but not the types that we're used to seeing. They're not high-rises. They're all low-rises, but quite nice. And the town is a very small little town. So it'll be interesting. But the wonderful thing about Roatan is the people are just friendly and fun, and it'll be a great experience for the cruise ship passengers, that's for sure.
Well, it's really the people in the place where it makes the difference between a good port and a bad port in the end, so that's great to hear.
And then also, RCL is canceling their year-round, or they're going to start the year-round sailing from Europe for the first time. That's what it is, okay.
Right, that's exactly right. They're starting to, so Royal Caribbean made a big announcement that they're putting 7 ships into Europe this year, which they made it sound like a big deal, but really isn't, because they already have 6 ships there, so it
right.
wasn't that exciting. But what I found to be the most interesting part was that they've announced they're going to start doing year-round cruising from Barcelona, which I think is really cool. It's the first time that they put a ship year-round in Europe, and you know, it just shows that all the cruise lines, Royal Caribbean included, are working at, you know, broadening out beyond the, you know, traditional activities they've done, the traditional activity being spend, you know, the summer in the Mediterranean and the
right.
winter in the Caribbean. So they realize there's an opportunity for year-round cruising. And, in fact, I'm sure what Royal Caribbean was thinking about is that they, you know, they saw that Carnival's Costa brand is growing and growing and growing in Europe. They've had year-round cruising in Europe for a long time because the company's based in Genoa, Italy. And, you know, they didn't want to just cede that year-round European cruise market to the Carnival brands.
Well, I think, you know, and Barcelona is such a great city, so a great choice.
Oh, I absolutely love Barcelona.
Yeah,
it's a wonderful city. Perfect
I do
place.
As well.
And the other news that came out from that is that the third Freedom Class mega ship from Royal Caribbean, this is the one that's, you know, the world's largest ship, there'll be three of them by this point, called Independence of the Seas, will do its inaugural season from Southampton, England, starting in May 2008. So, you know, Royal Caribbean making a commitment to Europe.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just hope that the traditional London overcast and cool weather doesn't dampen the spirits of the people surfing on the surfing machine on board Independence of the Seas.
Well, they might have to wait till they get to the next port.
Hopefully they'll have some occasional sunny skies, yes.
Now, Silver Seas has placed an order for a 36,000-ton ship.
Yep, this will be their largest ship, 540 passengers. It's being built by the Italian shipbuilder Fincantieri, and this was just announced at the Sea Trade Show. And this is the first newly built ship since 1998, when Silver Shadow and Silver Whisper were signed for construction by Silver Sea. So this will be a 40% increase in Silver Sea's overall capacity, up to a total for the fleet of about 1,900 passenger berths. So,
right.
You know, 540 passengers, it's still a relatively small ship, and that's what Silver Sea is known for, is relatively small ship, ultra-luxury cruising, which is exactly what it is. Very high class, very white-glove service, very exclusive, and with a price to match, and fans would say that it's well worth it.
Now, Disney's adding two new ships as well.
Yes, we got new ships coming out of the woodwork here, Roy. Out of the woodwork,
this
I tell you.
This is amazing, actually.
Well, Disney Cruise Line, it's funny. They, I mean, you know, they're renowned. The two ships they have now, they always sail full. They always sail at a premium price for people who really want that Disney experience. And, you know, it's for a number of years it's been clear that Disney could add more ships. Now they finally announced that they're doing it. So they're building these two new ships for delivery in 2011 and 2012, which are both larger than their existing ships. So this will more than double their current capacity. So, you know, everybody out there wearing mouse ears, here's more Disney capacity for you. And, you know, we can expect that perhaps they'll be able to maintain their high price point. Perhaps the more than doubling of capacity will make their cruises a little bit more affordable. Who knows? We'll
see. Yeah, that's an interesting point. You know, you're beginning to wonder where they're going to park all these ships at some point, you know?
Yeah, they're holding back on a lot of those details and what they're planning on doing. Now, you know, Disney did start experimenting with bringing a ship to the West Coast a few years ago, so I wouldn't be surprised at all to see at least one, if not two, of their ships on the West Coast. We'll see.
Yeah, that would be interesting because you're right. They're mostly out of Orlando area now.
That's
at the moment,
right.
You know?
Mm-hmm, that's exactly
and
correct.
Of course, the original Disney land is on the West Coast. So.
It's in California. That's right. Well, you know, have they come a long way or what? I mean, the original cruises that were done with Disney were done by now bankrupt Premier Cruise Lines on their ship, the Big Red Boat. That was the first time Disney experimented with combining a land and sea vacation by partnering with an existing cruise line. And, of course, when Disney decided that it went so well, they were going to take that business away from Premier and build their own ships instead. That was one of the things, I think, that, you know, in the end resulted in Premier not being able to sustain itself.
Tell us about the senior citizen, a cruise tourist that killed a mugger in Costa Rica.
Is it? That's exactly right. That is what happened. I mean, isn't it incredible everybody always enjoys hearing stories about a robber who tries to pull off some bad act and
right.
then ends up getting theirs? Well, this guy certainly got his. This was in late February. A group of 12 senior citizens who had been on board Carnival Liberty and docked in Limon, Costa Rica, decided to arrange their own tour separate from the cruise lines. The 12 of them rented a bus and were touring around Limon. And apparently their bus accidentally ended up in a bad area of town. And three robbers walked up to this group of 12 senior citizens, and one of those three robbers pulled a gun. Well, one of these senior citizens is a Marine. You know, once a Marine, always a Marine.
Right.
And put the gun-wielding robber in a headlock, and depending on whose reports you believe, either, you know, accidentally suffocated him to death or snapped his neck, one or the other. And the two other robbers, wisely, ran away.
Well, you know, I was going to say that I'll bet they were ex-Marines, these guys, or something like that.
Oh, yes, that's right. Well, the one senior citizen who put up the defense was indeed an ex-Marine. And And then they took, so they didn't know what to do. They wanted to do the right thing, so they actually took this robber who had just died and put him on their tour bus and brought him to the police station.
Well, you know, the thing is, what's that old, that country western song? I'm getting older, and I'm not as good as I once was, but I'm good once as I ever was. You know?
Well, you know, I mean, that's, wow. That's all I had to say when I read that story was wow.
Yeah, that exactly. And just to close, there's two more items. One, that the Windstar Oceana was sold.
Well, yeah, both Windstar Cruises and Oceana Cruises were sold. The sale is pending. Carnival Corp is divesting itself of Windstar. Carnival Corp is saying that it doesn't want to be in a niche cruise business so much anymore. Windstar is a wonderful but niche cruise line.
Right.
It's being sold to a company called Ambassadors International that runs the Majestic America River Cruise Company. And they're saying, of course, they want to keep it exactly as it is, you know, perhaps improve it somewhat, but the whole Windstar ambiance should remain the same, according to them. It's a it was a $100 million deal, and, you know, but my thought was, my God, $100 million, I could have rounded up some investment and bought Windstar. So I had no idea such a low price tag on it.
Yeah, we could have chipped in.
Well, I would have called you first. Okay, then the second one is Oceana Cruises.
Right.
A majority investment was made by an investment company named Apollo Management that buys lots of stuff. So Apollo Management owns a hotel chain, ski resort, satellite radio company, and they decided to add a cruise line, apparently. They came along and purchased Oceana Cruises with an $850 million majority investment. So the management at Oceana is expected to remain the same. The chairman, one of the founders, Frank Del Rio, is expecting to stay. And, in fact, Oceana at the Sea Trade Conference didn't give any details, but they announced that one of the things they're doing with their new investment is making a billion-dollar multi-ship new vessel order. So this will be the first time that Oceana is buying a new ship as opposed to having bought the ships that came out of Renaissance Cruises when it went bankrupt. So, again, there are no details given about this new ship order, when or how many or what the ships will be like. But, you know, we can see they're doing good things with this money they've just made with this investment from Apollo Management.
Well, great news, Evan, and thanks for the update. It's great talking to you, and we look forward to talking to you next week.
You're very welcome.
Hope bye for now.
The show was great, Roy. Bye. Bye-bye.
Thanks, bye. Evan Eggers, we're going to run. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, award-winning journalist Sandra Finney will be with us, so hang in there.
Totally gone native. Totally playful. Totally never tried that before. Totally Club Med. Introducing the new Total All-Inclusive Club Med with unlimited drinks, all-day dining, world-class accommodations, 64 sports and activities, all gratuities and more for a totally great price. So you can totally forget your wallet. Call today for a totally unlimited, totally together, totally barefoot time. Book now and save on a 7-night total all-inclusive vacation to Club Med in the Caribbean, Bahamas, or Mexico. Call today. You'll totally want to do it again. Oh, yeah.
A long, long time ago, on graduation day.
Well, this is kind of mellow music to introduce our next guest. In this Grassroots article, travel journalist Sandra Finney explores Prince Edward Island and takes us to four of her favorite places. Welcome to Talking Travel once again, Sandra.
Good morning, Roy. I was thinking the same thing about that music. Roses are red. I thought, oh my.
Yeah, we just kind of
that I wrote for you. The very top photo in PEI has some wild roses in a field overlooking potatoes, which overlooks the ocean and the Northumberland Bay. It's wonderful.
Yeah. I understand that there's some congratulations are in order. Didn't you just win a journalist award?
No, that would be a friend of mine.
Who is that?
Perhaps I shouldn't say, and only because there are two or three that I have in mind, and I don't know who you have in mind, Roy.
Oh, okay.
I was nominated for an award 2 years ago, thrill of a lifetime, but this one is not me today.
Well, we're awarding you one because you're one of our favorite guests, and
thank you, dear.
And you always bring us some great you know, just some great articles and some great photos to share with our audience.
Wait a minute, Roy. The light goes on. Yes, I was given an award, and it was by that wonderful man, Bob Fisher, who gave me La Grip Award.
That's it. That's the one I was referring to, and I thought it looked very, very attractive. And I didn't know that he was the one that was the actual person that awarded it, because it certainly looked like it came from the Canadian government.
Now, don't get me laughing, because I'll be off on a coughing tangent here. But anyway,
well, he always likes
it made my day, I'll tell you. It picked me up quite a bit when I saw that come through. La Grip Award.
The Grip Award, yeah.
Well, I haven't had a cold since God was young, and I'll tell you, this one has just knocked me off my feet. Anyway, life moves on.
Right. Let's go to this warm, friendly and place called Prince Edward Island.
And, let's do that.
And the four places that you would like to recommend.
Well, I've been there for 30 years. We go every summer. It's just such an amazing place to be and to have a vacation. But last year, for the first time, we ventured off our traditional path and the places that we hang out and especially love. And we took extra time. We had a few extra days, so we decided to go what the islanders call up east and up west.
Right.
And what we did, Roy, was really take a route that, if you're into crafts or artisan's work, fine art, jewelry, any kind of craft things that are handmade and really well done, this is really for you. So, and we just love those kinds of things, so that's what we did. And we started off our little journey at a place called Alpaca Bay Farm in Poundwall. And the owner there, Heather Jones, gave us a tour of her farm, and it's just amazing. She has, oh my goodness, 40, 50, 48 alpacas, I think. And at the time, she had four that were pregnant. I have no idea when this woman sleeps, because she's continually taking care of the alpacas and taking care of guests coming to the farm, giving farm tours. She's shearing. She's making things with her alpaca wool, and it was such an eye-opener. First of all, I've never seen an alpaca,
right.
And they're so curious. They're just the most wonderful, sensitive, inquiring, nosy kind of animal, and they were just such fun.
And you say they
so
communicate by...
off our journey on just a wonderful note.
You say they communicate by making large mewing noises.
Yes, it sounds like there are a number of giant snoring cats. I can't describe it any other way, but they really do communicate. And you talk to them, and they do this mewing thing, this purring thing back, and it's quite delightful, quite delightful. And they're tame, and they love to be petted and fussed over, and they're really just wonderful.
And then from there you went where, to Belfast Mini Mills?
Belfast Mini Mills. Now, this is an extraordinary story. It's a group of six family members, mothers, fathers, a couple of aunts and uncles, and originally they were living in B.C. But they moved to PEI, if memory serves, around 12 years ago. And one of the reasons they started with making machinery to card wool is because they had been raising some very rare breed of sheep in B.C., and they found that when they would send their wool off somewhere to be carded and spun and returned, they could never be guaranteed that they would be getting their own wool back. And this was important to them because they had spent so much time in investing in this, fluffing a superior product. Anyway, long story short, they thought, okay, we'll invent machines to clean and card our own. And I believe they had a daughter living in PEI, and the daughter said, well, come on down, you know, the weather's great, and maybe we could start up shop here. So now they have the mini mills, and they bring in from all over the world different kinds of wool to be cleaned and carded and spun into wool and then returned to the owner. And it's just extraordinary. I mean, they do wool from yaks and kivyut and angora goats, camel, very exotic animals, along with, you know, the standard sheep and whatnot. So they have tons, and I mean tonnages, of wool that come into them every year, which they clean and card and spin and dye and then ship back to the owners. And they also raise some of their own products. So with that, they make things on the farm, and they have just an extraordinary weaver that is there, and she weaves rugs and shawls and duvets, and it's amazing. It's just
amazing. What surprised me was hair from pot-bellied pigs.
Yes.
I mean, who would have ever thought of that?
Who would have thought that, indeed?
And, I mean, I can see the Angora goats, I can see camel, yaks, but pot-belly pigs, that one threw me.
Yeah. Now, mind you, apparently it does pose a bit of a problem, and in fact, they do have a pot-belly pig on the farm, and in fact, they do collect the hair and make things with it. I think it's more for an oddity than anything else, but they can do it. That's the point. It's just, it's quite amazing. And aside from having their own mill where they take care of all this products coming in, they also manufacture products. So the guys in the family, and of course they've hired several people in the community, it's another little mini part of the business on the farm where they actually create and produce and set up these little mini mills, which they then export to different parts of the world. They've sold over and set up over 30 places in different countries to do the same thing that they're doing in PEI. It's wonderful.
How amazing. That's really terrific.
It is.
And of course, as you say, don't wash your wool socks in hot water.
Well, I learned that, and it's amazing because I've always had trouble with washing. You know, you have a really fine sock, a cashmere sock, and then it ends up about 6 inches shorter than when you first dealt with it. But the key is just to use the same temperature water. So if you're washing in a lukewarm water, rinse in a lukewarm water. If you're washing in hot water, rinse in hot water. The best is just a lukewarm water.
Exactly.
Yep.
I live in Florida. We try not to wear socks if we don't have to.
Oh, you lucky boy. I'm looking at 17 feet of snow right this minute.
Oh, my.
Going quickly, but it's still a lot.
Well, I'm looking at it's 75 degrees here, and certainly no wool socks.
And the next thing you're going to tell me, you've been for a swim today.
Well, no, I haven't been yet, but I will just after lunch. Thank you. So then you went off to, where'd you go to from there? You went to one of the wineries, I think.
Yes, we slipped into Rossignol Estate Wineries. And this is an interesting thing. A fellow who, John is his name, John Rossignol, was involved in the refrigeration business in Ontario and thought, enough of this and crazy traffic, and decided to move lock, stock, and barrel to PEI. And as he was trying to figure out, take a year or two, well, what am I going to do now? He started making some wines, and he loved the process. And then he grew an acre of grapes, and that grew to two or three, and now they're up to 10 acres. And over the years, he hasn't been doing it that long. I think it's his 11th year of operation, but he learned very quickly how to turn out a lovely wine. It's the only winery on PEI, and he just does a drop-dead gorgeous product. It's great, and he loves talking to people about his process, and he farms organically, of course, and he uses only real oak to weather his red wines to age them. And it's just a delightful character. It was such a nice stop on our journey because the grounds are gorgeous. It overlooks the Northumberland Bay, and it's just a beautiful, calming, very pastoral, scenic place to be and spend a few hours. It was wonderful.
And most of these wines, are they sweet? Because you mentioned that one of the most popular is a strawberry rhubarb aperitif, which I found interesting.
Right. I wouldn't say most. I'm pulling this out of my memory tree, which is a little foggy, but I'm going to say about half and half.
Okay.
I know that he has won some awards for one of his white wines, and he's also won an award for one of his Maribel Foch wines, So I'm going to say half and half, but I think his preference are the sweet ones. I think he personally gets a kick out of that because they are quite different and quite unique.
And he does a maple liqueur, which I found interesting.
Yeah, and that one's in the bottle is quite interesting also. It's in the shape of a fiddle. So that's just a, kind of a kinky little thing. But
yeah, I don't know where that came from.
He seems to pride himself with the labels, Roy, because every label is put on the bottle by hand. It's not done by machine. And also, everyone is a replica of an original art drawing. He's an artist, and also his wife's an artist. So they go to great pains to take one of their pieces that they're known for and then turn this into a label. It's really quite lovely.
And I think that's important because people do buy with their eyes. And when we look at a dish of food, it's all in the eye. And that's why so many chefs go to such great trouble to decorate the plates as they do. And I think it's wonderful. I'm not surprised, of course, about the maple part of it, because obviously there's a lot of maple syrup comes from that area. But
exactly.
To turn it into a liqueur is quite interesting. And
one of
these days I'll get up there and we'll give it a try.
Well, you must. The other thing is you can sample away to your heart's content for a loonie. And for our friends who are not from Canada, that's the equivalent of a Canadian dollar. So if you pop a buck in a jar, you can sample away any sample you want. And that, all that money, he gives to the hospital in Charlottetown. So it makes a great little fundraiser through the summertime as well.
Okay, now let's move along because we're getting a little tight on time. We've been kind of chatting away here.
Yeah.
From there, you went to Murray River, I think.
Murray River. Whew, that seems to be a mouthful this morning. This woman has a business called Fit and Image. And again, she's in the fiber business. She imports alpaca wool and makes sweaters and lovely garments. Just beautiful. So she's a knitter. She has a knitting machine, and she knits yards and yards of material using the alpaca wool, and then she cuts and forms it to the person. She takes personal measurements, and it's all done, that part is certainly all done by hand, and it's an amazing little operation that she has, and she so loves the alpaca wool, and certainly could have talked to us about it for about 2 or 3 days. Fascinating, just fascinating.
And then, let's see, we've covered three. The last one would be where?
Well, oh my goodness, I'll go quickly here. This wonderful gal, Terry Hall, makes jewelry out of silversmithing and beach stone that she finds on the beach, and that's very unusual. She's in Bay Fortune. And then there's a woodworker, Jacques and Dion Goudreau, have Goudreau Fine Woodworking Artisans. They're in Rustico, and it's a place where your mouth just kind of drops to the floor in awe of what he does. He's just magical, and he did a demonstration for me. He started to turn out a bowl out of red cherry, and I could have wept. It was just so, it was like a little theater performance, and it was the artistry that goes into making what he does with these pieces of wood is really extraordinary.
How lovely.
Just enthralled with it all, just enthralled.
Sandra.
Do I have one more minute?
Yep, go ahead.
Okay, then we went up, this would be quite high up west in PEI, to a place called Back Road Folk Art. Well. Folk art, I mean, I've seen a lot of folk art. We have lots of it in Nova Scotia, but I have never seen anything to this scale. This fellow is just too funny. And he has three places. He has an amazing barn, which the bottom part is loaded with his artwork, and then the top part is kind of an antique place with all kinds of old machinery and hand tools and whatnot. And then if he's not really busy, he'll invite you into his home. Now, I don't know how he could actually live in this home, because it's just, you can't turn around but bump into a piece of folk art, and it might be a sawed-off cat or a giant goose or a man with three arms. It is just too funny. Even their headboard in their bedroom is the back part of a stand-up piano. Too funny. He's built a place called the Old Times Garden House Museum, And that really is hysterical. It just, there's all kinds of things in it, like a guessing wall, and he actually has a place where he tells a story about skunks coming to PEI as tourists and not leaving. And I missed that story. I was so engrossed with gawking with everything else that's in the place. I just totally missed it.
Sandra,
how delightful.
We've got to run it. It's wonderful. But for those listening, if you go to TTRN.com, you can read Sandra's article in depth and see some fabulous photos. And once again, Sandra, we thank you very much for sharing that all with us.
Oh, this is so much fun always. I enjoy our chat.
Thank you.
Have a great day, Roy.
Thank you. You too. I love it as well.
Okay.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Sandra Finney, always great articles, but we're running a little bit behind sched. We're going to go to a quick break, and when we come back, L. Andrew Warner will join us.
USA 3000 Airlines knows the way. USA 3000 now flies to and from Fort Myers, St. Petersburg, Clearwater, and Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood, servicing 11 different cities, all at our same low fares starting at $59. No peanuts served here. For a low fare with a real meal and in-flight entertainment, choose USA 3000. USA 3000 has simple fare rules regardless of the fare. There are no Saturday night stays and no round trip required on any fare. They have a low change fee, and this is the part you're really going to love. Even if you miss your flight, you don't lose your fare. So what are you waiting for? With fares this low and rules this simple, you can afford to take someone with you. Call now to make your reservations at 1-877-USA-3000. That's 1-877-USA-3000. You can also book online at www.usa3000.com or call your local travel agent.
Well, we're back, and we're running a little bit behind schedule, but it's always a pleasure to welcome L. Andrew Warner to the show. Thank you for joining us today, L.
Glad to be here.
I understand you're going to soothe our souls a little bit in Nova Scotia.
Yes, it's a marvelous place. Around the eastern shoreline, down from the Peggy's Cove, down to the Whale's Back, and down to keeping on to Ocean Stone. Wonderful place. You don't quite have the words. You just feel it.
Now, this, as I understand it, and I'm looking at your article, the extraordinary part about this is that you're standing on a large granite glacier, which is what smooth boulders at Peggy's Cove. Is that correct?
You know, you look, and it's just like a couple of football fields of these whale's back, what they call whale's back when it has been glacier smoothed.
Right.
It looks like a whale's back.
Right.
And you, everywhere you see, there's just rocks. I mean, and everything, every rock is a little bit different, or they're all smooth, and you can walk along. There's cracks. There's boulders. There's smoothness. And you look out in the oceans just right there. It's just a fusion of all kinds of senses.
And even though, as you say, you've been there numerous times, and yet you discover something different and more dramatic every time you go there.
You know, I think part of it is that as you get older, you just have different eyes. You're taking more time to look at things. You're not rushing to go buy something or go shopping or quickly do this and quickly run somewhere else.
Yeah, very well said. I find that very true.
Yeah.
When we're younger, we just don't take the time to look at things or to take a little pocket microscope with us, or a magnifying glass rather, and to stop and pick something up, whether it's a shell or a stone or a leaf, and look at it more in detail. And you're absolutely correct.
And you're looking at the ocean, which in itself has a special draw. I mean, it's like a beautiful to look out there. Your thoughts, it's a great reflective time as well. And when you're young, you don't have time for that reflective stuff. You got to go on. But you sit and you look at that and you think, wow, look at nature. This is just amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And now, just to give us an idea, or at least our audience an idea, of where this is located.
Peggy's Cove is one of the most famous places and one of the most popular spots in Atlantic Canada. And it's about 27 miles from downtown Halifax. So that's roughly about half an hour.
Right.
And that's on the southwest from Halifax. And it's on a little peninsula coming out. And there's a cove, and that's what it's called, the Peggy's Cove. And it's just along that eastern shoreline. So as you're driving, the ocean is really beside you the whole time.
So, and it's a typical maritime fishing village, as you point out, right?
Yes, it started back in 1811. And, I mean, even everything in that time period has wonderful little legends. Apparently the name Peggy's came from one of the legends, that a shipwreck survivor of the 1800s called Margaret. And she went and lived at the Cove, and people started calling her Peggy, and her house became the Cove, Peggy's Cove. Others say she was a settler. So you can take the exotic kind of explanation or the other. And so it goes back quite a long ways. It was six families of German descent that had that got the grant in 1811, and then they fished and raised cattle and farmed a bit.
Interesting.
And it continues still to be there.
And of course, it as you rightly point out, is one of the most popular places to visit in the area.
It is, and it has tour buses coming in all the time, and so often the tour buses, they go to the restaurant or the big parking lot there, which is beautiful, a wonderful place. But, you know, people don't get in as much to go visit the village later on because the rocks, you can spend hours on them. But this time I took the time. Instead of just driving in and driving out again, it's just a marvelous little place, and to think they've been there for almost 200 years.
Amazing. Tell us about the old lighthouse.
The lighthouse is quite unique. It's a very small one. It was built in 1868, the original one, and it's been decommissioned for a time now. It was a wood one and reconstructed as the concrete later on. And it's the traditional red and white that all Canadian lighthouses are. And it's quite unique. You can go in there in the summertime and bring a letter, and they will actually stamp it, Peggy's Cove, mail from Peggy's Cove. And so you see it going from there. It's a very small one. It's not a working lighthouse. But it just adds a drama to when you're looking at the scene and you have these gray-white boulders and then you have this stark red and white lighthouse right at the edge of it.
You also mentioned that for those that do visit, to be cautious about the rock walking close to the ocean.
You can become mesmerized by the ocean, and I've done it myself. You get too close, but those rogue waves can come, and there's usually a couple of people that die every year that are swept off the rocks close to the edge, and because the rocks are so big, you think, well, nothing's going to happen. But a rogue wave can come, and it can take you, and most people that are swept away do not survive. The other danger, too, is, and I did this one of the times, you get so mesmerized with the water and just walking, you don't look at where you're stepping.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
There's still crevices. It's still wild country. And I went flat on my face. I mean, just plunk. And I didn't get hurt, but it is something to be aware of, to be cautious when you're walking.
Now, you use the term I find interesting, because one doesn't hear it referred to very often in the States, but you refer to it as rock walking. And now, is that just a term that you use because you were walking on rocks, or is it actually referred to as a traditional thing one does? They go rock walking.
I've heard the term, and again, I agree with you. It's not often used, but people that rock really love to rock walk. That's what you call it, or walking on the rocks. But easier to say rock walking,
right.
Has a different exoticness to it. But there are so many places in Canada along the Canadian Shield. You have it in the territories. You have it on the West Coast, where there's just you can go quite a distance walking on these glaciated smooth rocks. And it just seems like a good term to use rather than walking on rocks.
Well, I can remember as a young lad, we lived near the ocean, and we used to walk out on these rock jetties that went out into the ocean. And it was great fun to walk out on them and find little things that were hidden in these crevices that had washed up when the tide was higher. But, yes, one had to be careful because were the rocks at one point wet, maybe over the evening or early in the morning, but they sometimes get that green moss on it, which can be very slippery.
Ah, yes, yes. See, there isn't the moss right at Peggy's Cove when you go. I mean, once you're not right at the edge, it's just smooth. But there's something about walking. There's paths, but be able to stand on that actual rock. I mean, it's you connecting with that rock.
Now, you say that the population of this historic little village is 76.
Yes, 76. I've seen some figures lower, a few just a little bit higher, but 76 seems to be the average number.
And it was founded in 1811 by six German families, is that correct?
Yes, families of German descent. They were granted right. 800 acres.
Oh, great. And they've managed to keep the population to a mere minimum. I wonder if the men travel a lot.
From what I've been able to determine, they still do go out for lobster fishing. And then some of them, of course, are tied into just the tourism, because that is a huge thing at Peggy's Cove all year round.
Interesting. I'm just going through some math in my head. A population of 76. It was founded in 1811 with six families. You would think there might be a few more children than that.
Yeah, there could be as well, but they may have moved on as well. I mean,
yeah,
that could be a small community.
Yeah, good point. You know, the parents might like it, but the children look at it in a different manner. For those that are listening, the article, Elle's article is up on our site with some very nice photos along with it, and you can read it more in depth by going to ttrn.com. And Elle, once again, thank you very much for sharing this with you, and we always look forward to speaking with you.
Thank you so much, and have a great day.
Will do. Bye for now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Nova Scotia is one of the places that I've really wanted to travel to for some time, and one of these days I'll get Bob Fisher to arrange that for me, since he seems to know his way around there very well. We're going to break, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by the one and only Wonder Woman, Suzanne Wright.
This is the story of Mary and Larry. They had cabin fever so bad it was scary.
We need a vacation, a place warm and sunny, a place that's fun for not much money.
Let's escape the cold and the snow. We'll fly Sky Value from Gary, Chicago.
Sky Value now offers great rates from convenient Gary, Chicago Airport to your favorite hotspots, Orlando, St. Pete, Fort Lauderdale, Phoenix, and Las Vegas. Book your flight at flyskyvalue.com.
Gary, Chicago Airport works for me. The drive was easy.
The parking secure and free.
Sky Value. You sure saved us money.
You're so smart.
And so is my honey.
And they flew Sky Value from Gary Chicago Airport happily ever after. Fares are one-way, subject to availability and change. Restrictions apply. Fares do not include September 11th security fees and other U.S. taxes and fees. See participant agreement for details. Sky Value flights operated by Extra Airways, PC number 06154.
Here she is, Wonder Woman herself, travel journalist Suzanne Wright.
Hey, Roy. How you doing?
I'm doing terrific. How about you?
Super duper.
Well, you've really outdone yourself with the photos and this article on Indonesia. I mean, I just can't believe the photos. For those of you listening, you must go to Suzanne's article at ttrn.com. And obviously read the article more in depth, which when I printed it out was 17 pages. But the photos are absolutely incredible. Everything Suzanne writes is wonderful. But this one, you've really done a marvelous job on this, Suzanne.
Oh, thanks.
It's just terrific.
I know it's a long one. You know, and I normally do not write articles this long, but I couldn't think of one thing to leave out.
Well, I wouldn't think I would leave out, but when I was going through the photos, I see a set of feet sticking out from the water there with a lot of little flowers around it, and I was trying to...
Well, anyone who's had the privilege of visiting Indonesia and Bali in particular well knows, even armchair travelers know, that there is a tremendous spa culture in that area of the world. And, you know, I had to partake. And it occurred to me as I was sitting in one of the Aman properties and getting a Mandi Lular, which is a treatment that is meant to prepare brides for their wedding night, Javanese royalty, in fact, for their wedding night. And there's a similar kind of a pampering preparation that takes place for men. But as I was sitting there in this fragrant milk bath with the rose petals floating on top, and I'd had a pedicure the day before, I thought, you know, this would be a cute picture.
And you just
reach
happen
for my handy camera, and there you go. Not to drop it in the water.
Do you have happen to have one of these cameras that you know, with a little strap onto your forehead there, so you
like a miner?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, first of all, you've been to Indonesia before, as you mentioned the island. But you know, I just noticed as I was reading through this was something that I find just a little bit surprising, because that they only achieved their independence from the Dutch in 1949.
Kind of interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you think with the history and the number of years that this goes back to, and Bali and all of these things we hear, that it was just as early as 1949.
Right. And I did not take a historical trip. My trip was not in purpose historical. It was more spiritually oriented. But that was an interesting factoid to me, along with the actual sheer size and scope of the country itself. I mean, I focused my trip in and readers will see this when they're online, in Bali, which is the best known Indonesian destination for non-Indonesians, for Westerners, if you will, along with the island of Java, which was my personal favorite, and the island of Lombok. And you know, there are somewhere upwards of 6,000 inhabited and 10,000 uninhabited islands, 350 ethnic groups, and the population is just barely behind that of the U.S. It's a massive, massive part of the world.
And the mix seems to work.
It works beautifully.
And that's the beauty of it all, isn't it?
That's right.
Why can't we learn something from this?
Well, again, you know, it points out that even though, unfortunately, the headlines of a lot of the news outlets that we're all privy to seem to focus on the chaos and the not getting along of ethnic groups.
No, you're right.
And the strife and that sort of thing. I mean, it really is multiculturalism in action when you're talking about, you know, Buddhists living next door to Muslims, living next door to Catholics, living next door to Christians, just all the way down the line. This is a very, very multi-layered, multi-textured culture that has had its share of challenges. I mean, I think, you know, no one who is interested in the larger world is not aware that Indonesia has had, you know, they've had their share of misfortunes in terms of man-made misfortunes as well as earthquakes and things like that. So there's a certain graceful beauty to how the people manage their lives.
And a particular calmness, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's real hard not to let that wash over you and really, you know, I started my story by saying that incrementally, I believe Asia in general changes a person. And I think if you fall in love with the region, if you fall in love with Southeast Asia and you begin to go country to country, you begin to see this repeating pattern. And it's very different than Western life.
Absolutely. And the thing is that you need to take the time. You just can't rush through something like
right.
this as Americans tend to do. Let's kind of walk through it, if
sure.
you will. Now, you've stayed at some of the luxury resorts. Vicky Oberoi is an old friend of mine, and so I see you've stayed at one of his hotels. But
yeah, you know what? Let's dive in and talk about Lombok, because Lombok
okay, yeah,
is really,
good.
Really interesting.
Good.
Lombok is a much, much smaller island than Bali, and Bali itself is not a large island. But I came over. I took a short flight, 20-minute hop to Lombok, and many, many people who both live and work on the island, expats as well as locals, will tell you that it's Bali on rewind, if you will. It's just a quieter area. It also enjoys a really interesting position in terms of where it's located in the world. It's called the Lombok Strait. It's a trench that marks the place where two tectonic plates, the Asian tectonic plate and the Australian tectonic plate, meet under the water, deep under the water. And scientists believe that that's why there are differences in both topography and climate between Lombok and Bali. It's much, much drier in Lombok.
Interesting.
And the second largest volcano in the entire country is on Lombok. And yet it has many of the same really alluring features of Bali, you know, gorgeous beaches, beautiful wildlife, you know, unspoiled jungle, rainforest.
And you say that the first settlers were from India or Burma.
Or Burma, yeah. And today the ancestors of those folks are called Sesak, and they maintain a rather simple agrarian life. And certainly if you stay in a property like Oberoi, you know, they can really connect you with guides who can give you an intellectual, cultural understanding of the region. And, you know, whether you go by a horse-drawn cart, or whether you take a private car, whether you go by bike, whether you go by foot, I can't stress enough to listeners the value of hiring a local guide.
Absolutely.
Makes all the difference in the world.
Absolutely.
And that explains why I had access to some incredible pictures, and why I was able, you know, to go to some local traditional villages, and, you know, just by bringing some pencils or some crackers or some candy, you know, you're very welcomed into the home. And, you know, the homes are very modest, but, you know, very tidy. It's interesting to see the architecture. It's interesting to talk to people about their life, and I think it's very removed for most of us who, you know, toil away on keyboards and in cubicles.
And you did some diving while you were there, didn't you?
I did do some diving. Yeah, that was fantastic. I mean, you gotta love a day where you get off an airplane, you take an hour's winding, beautiful ride past monkeys in the street, you know, have lunch, and then go out on a dive boat that the Oberoi provides within 2.5 hours. Yeah, super.
Right.
Just great. So, yeah, good diving there. It was a little bit stirred up. There had been some storms in the area that had washed through and created some disturbances in the water. But as I stated in the article, you know, definitely saw big turtles, lots of fish, manta rays.
What about the weather during this time you would go there?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You know, maybe this is what Al Gore has been warning us about, but... global warming, global changes in climate. This is supposed to be the rainy season. I was in Indonesia in December and January, and that should be the rainiest season. I had very little rain. I think I had maybe in a two-week span between these three different, you know, and this is the equivalent of going from perhaps from, you know, Chicago to Maine or Seattle to Texas. So spanning some geography there. Probably had a day and a half, 2 days of inclement weather. Very little.
Well, I mean that's super, because sometimes we hear different stories about, you know, those areas and different...
This is not a monsoon area,
yeah,
unlike
right.
India.
Right.
They do not have the kind of massive storms that would be devastating as a general rule. And I hope now I don't hear a headline about that next
right.
week. But even in the rainy season, you know, you might find what you do down there in Florida, Roy. You might just find that, you know, a couple hours of rain and then boom, the sun's out,
gone.
And
yeah.
off you go.
Now, you always bring up an interesting point that I'm sure that many of our listeners are interested in, and it's going it alone, whether it's Asia or anywhere else, and you do travel frequently, as you say, and frequently alone.
Mm-hmm.
So let's chat about that a little bit, if you will.
Well, you know, I'm as regular listeners know, I'm definitely not the person to wait around for the appropriate companion, whatever that means in a listener's ear.
Except for mushing.
And you know, this is what I do for a living. So, you know, I need to be able to go and go at a minute's notice and travel far and wide. And you know, I just don't carry fear with me. It's not one of the things that I pack. That's what I tell people.
Right.
I mean, I live in Atlanta, and although the Atlanta CVB may not want to know this or hear this, you know, Atlanta and, in fact, most major U.S. cities are, in my opinion, and statistically are far more unsafe than almost any far-flung destination that a listener would go to. And particularly in Asia, I have found it is very easy to travel alone as a woman. And you can move very freely. I mean, you might be the object of some curiosity, but it's certainly always well-intended. There's nothing I've ever found malicious. I have not ever felt this need to look over my shoulder. I mean, I have, and I discuss in the article some of my, you know, just musings about why that is, but I just believe it's part of that cultural calmness and respect, and it's a certain lack of aggression that we don't have in the Western world. So I would encourage anyone who's interested in traveling to any part of Southeast Asia or Asia at a larger clip to just go it alone. You know, again, you stay in great hotels, you hire local guides, you can have as much company as you like.
Right.
And the fine kind of, a fine quality of company, a very enriching quality of company.
Very well said. The only time that I've found that you might have been a little bit more cautious was dog mushing.
Yeah, that was right there in the great snowy Canadian north, right?
It was indeed. And you were very cautious about who was with you on that sled, as I recall.
Exactly. So yeah, I find it's very, very easy to move alone as a woman. And I think, you know, just take the precautions that you would take, you know, any place, which means, you know, be sure, I mean, really commonsensical things. Be sure you can manage your own luggage. I mean, I cannot tell you how many people I see struggling with oversized bags and too many of them, and, you know, then they're worried about having to leave it. But, you know, I do find that, you know, as Blanche DuBois said, the kindness of strangers is something you can really rely on when traveling. It's one of the great gifts of travel.
Yeah, absolutely. And the freedom of, as you say, doing what
absolutely.
You want to do and when you want to do
when
it.
When you want to do it, on your own schedule. I mean, you know, even if I travel with people, a lot of times they can spend a week and they've got to go home.
Exactly.
And I spent altogether on this particular journey 5 weeks, so two in Indonesia. Oh, and I must tell any of our listeners who are at all interested in spiritual heritage sites, Java and Borobudur would be in my list of world wonders. I mean, I've seen the list of the seven world wonders, and I would add this into the list.
I haven't been there, but it's on my list of things to do.
Yeah, it's incredible. Java is a really, really beautiful island, and there, you know, in addition to doing some voluntourism, which is really the idea of going and volunteering and giving back some time when you're in a land far from your own.
Right.
Visiting an orphanage that was near the Yamajiwo property, which is a spectacular property, kind of echoing the architecture of Borobudur. And Borobudur is the world's largest Buddhist temple, and it is nestled in the middle of a predominantly Muslim part of the world. So again, we talk about that multiculturalism and that living together, and, you know, it was just a stunning thing to take a sunrise walk there and take an elephant, you know, ride back through the village, and just, I mean, it was bewitching. I don't know any other way to say it. It was just bewitching.
Suzanne, it's a marvelous article, and for our listeners, please do yourself a favor. Go to the site, ttrn.com, and go to Suzanne's article. There's some really incredible photos, and you can read her article in depth. It's a super story, super article, and if we had an award to give, I'd award it to you today.
Oh, well, thanks, Roy. I hope everyone enjoys the article, and love to hear from you what you think about it.
Where are you off to next?
Gosh, I'm going to a place you've been. I'm going to Jordan.
You are?
I am.
Are you going
to
go with
Jordan at month's end, and I am really excited.
You're going with our friend Giselle.
I am. I'm really, really looking forward to it. It will actually mark my first time to technically set foot on Middle Eastern soil, so I'm looking tremendously forward to that.
Well, give her a big hug and a kiss for me. She's a great gal, and you'll You'll just love the trip.
Oh, I can't wait. Well, good. Thanks so much, Roy.
And look forward to... Listen, we look forward to hearing your report on Jordan when you come back.
Well, fantastic. And everybody, do yourselves a favor. And if Indonesia in general is not on your list, and Bali and Java and Lombok in particular, add it to your list and get there now. It's really one of the most authentically preserved spiritual cultures left in the world. So get there now.
Thank you, Suzanne.
Take care, Roy.
All right, bye for now. Bye. Suzanne Wright does a lot of traveling, and she's our Wonder Woman. Go online and look at these photos and read the article. It's absolutely terrific. You're listening to Talking Travel and on the Travel Talk Radio Network, TTRN.com, and the World Travel and Dining Channel. My guests next week are Evan Eggers, Andrew Warner will be with us again, and Hans Tamamagi, who we haven't spoken with for a while, and the one and only Johnny Jed. So until next week, this is Roy Lowy saying bye for now and happy travels.
You've been listening to Talking Travel with Roy Lowy and friends on the Travel Talk Radio Network. Visit our website at TTRN.com for complete show archives and interviews with guests like Chris Elliott, Peter Greenberg, Bob Fisher, Johnny Jett, and many other great travel professionals. Don't forget to tune in live every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern for more Talking Travel with Roy Lowy and friends.